This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Noelle Lim. Due to the COVID-19 outbreak, travel and tourism have been badly hit. For example, the Malaysian Hotel Association estimates that Malaysia will lose at least 60% of its tourism business this year, and about 15% of hotels surveyed believe that they will have to close completely. We speak with Mario Hardy, the CEO of Pacific Asia Travel Association, or PATA, on how the industry can move forward. PATA represents government tourism bodies, airlines, hotels, and tour agencies. Mario, good to have you here with us. Could you tell us what is the role and mandate of PATA?
So the organization was actually founded in 1951 in Hawaii by a group of tour operators whose premise was actually to get people to travel to Asia. And as I'm sure you understand, the world is actually reversed now. It's mostly Asia traveling to the rest of the world. So our mission has been since 1951 and still is today for the promotion and development of sustainable and responsible tourism to, within, and also from Asia. And we work, as you mentioned before, very closely with both the public and the private sector, which puts us in a very unique position. Our main objective is really to bring together both public and private sectors together in all discussions, not only in time of crisis, but also in times of where things are actually going really well. Look at challenges as well as opportunities within the travel and tourism industry.
How influential would you say PATA is?
I think, you know, PATA over the years, if you talk to people, veterans in the industry, will tell you that over the several decades, PATA was very, very influential with the various sectors in building tourism, specifically here in Asia in the early stage in developing tourism. It is still very relevant today and very influential in driving the discussions between public and private sectors and trying to solve some problems, but also to make recommendations on best practices and ways forward to move the industry.
So what are some things you are working for and pushing and hoping to make some progress on?
Pre-COVID, which is still very relevant today, we've been advocating for a number of years already for the dispersal of tourism. And what I mean by this is encouraging countries, states, and cities to disperse tourists outside of the busy areas and the busy centers. Or what I often refer to as the bucket list phenomenon of the places that people want to visit, like Angkor Wat, the Grand Palace in Bangkok, and many other iconic sites around the world that we as an industry have been promoting for so long, to make sure we distribute the wealth that actually tourism can bring into smaller provinces and cities and help alleviate poverty in certain areas, but also distribute the income that can be generated and also create jobs specifically. Still very relevant today, but obviously the numbers now are non-existent in terms of tourism. We're very small in places. So the focus is obviously shifting now to rebuilding an industry that actually has been dormant now for several months.
Redistributing tourists to make sure they really visit the non-urban areas as well, so to bring economic development to rural areas. Could you give us some numbers of how successful PATA has been in pushing this redistribution of tourists?
Sure. I'll tell you the numbers that are actually fresh in my mind, which is specifically to Thailand, where the organization is actually based, and we're obviously working very closely with the government here across the regions, but the numbers are more fresher in my mind for Thailand. So for the last 4 years, Thailand had a campaign trying to promote what they initially called the 12 hidden gems of Thailand, these secondary destinations or smaller cities. These 12 became 24, the 24 became 36. Every year they keep adding another 12, which are promoting. So we've seen a consistent growth pre-crisis of visitors to these secondary destinations at a rate of about 5 to 10% increase year on year for some of the destinations. An area that is probably not very known for many people, actually surprisingly was not even really well known within Thailand, which is called Khon Kaen, which is right in the center of the country. has been trying to develop itself as a MICE destination for meeting incentive conventions and exhibitions. And I've built a beautiful convention center and encouraging people to come and visit this rural area, attend conferences, attend exhibitions, and stay along and enjoy the local food and activities. We as an organization organized an event there 2 years ago, and it was absolutely amazing. There's something that's happened every year that has happened now for decades already in that city, which is a festival every year. And if you can picture in your mind, 70,000 women of all ages, from young to older ages, all dressed in yellow, dancing in perfect harmony for 24 hours nonstop. It was absolutely remarkable. If you're sitting in the center of the city, you could see a sea of yellow as you looked left, right, back or front. You saw, you know, thousands and thousands of women just dancing in perfect harmony. I've never heard of this before. Many of the attendees were at the conference. Well, actually, all attendees. I've never heard of this festival before. And imagine if actually the world knew about something like this, you would end up with thousands of people wanted to see this, because you can't really experience this anywhere else at the moment. So there are stories like this across the country. And if you travel to other places in Malaysia and other countries too, I'm sure there's equivalent stories of small villages and communities that have phenomenal festivals and activities that just people are not aware of.
So what would you say are your priorities now, given this COVID-19 outbreak and all that lockdowns?
Our priorities now at the moment is reopen the sector and to get businesses and organizations ready to receive and welcome guests again to their hotel properties, to their restaurants, to the attractions and archaeological sites that people are desperate to go and visit, to natures and et cetera. And that's the key part at the moment. And we're an industry that is suffering enormously, as you mentioned before. Trillions of dollars of lost of income for the industry. Millions of jobs that have been lost and are at risk between now and the end of the year. It will be a very long recovery, but we need to start. And so over the last week, I've actually seen some good signs of recovery already. A glimpse of light at the end of a tunnel, where domestic tourism here in Thailand has reopened. Our favorite resort in Hua Hin, which is 2.5 hours drive from Bangkok, is actually completely sold out until the third week of June. So it makes me really sad because I really wanted to get away from the city. But it makes me happy to know that actually the industry is starting to recover.
It seems like maybe countries like Thailand and Vietnam are already starting to come out of the doldrums.
Yes, certainly in Vietnam, one of the largest tour operator group that we talked to about a week ago, told us that actually all of their hotel properties are 100% booked for the next month. Obviously, domestic tourism, no international tourists. The borders are still closed for the moment. But domestic tourism in both countries seems to be picking up, which is a good start. We simply hope that regional tourism will start within the next 2 months, and we can see, our neighboring countries coming to visit Thailand, and Thai people obviously traveling to neighboring countries as well.
What do you think is prompting locals to flock hotels? Is it because prices have been dropped quite drastically?
There's been some drop in prices. I mean, obviously, some people are doing promotions, but I think hotels are now also clever. They, instead of reducing prices, are giving you more value instead. So stay longer, stay an extra night, you get a night free. If you stay a week, you get maybe two nights free. You might get breakfast or lunch or some vouchers for dinners and et cetera. But I mean, the reason why people want to get out is the same reason why I want to get out of the city. I've been in lockdown in a 24th floor of a high-rise building right in the city center for almost 3 months. I'm someone who used to be on the plane two times a week. And, I've never really been in one place for that long, for as far as I can remember. So I really want to get out of the city.
I would like to get your view about travel bubbles, the travel corridors where people can travel between selected countries, such as between China and South Korea, Singapore and New Zealand, where the COVID-19 situation is under control. How should countries assess the viability of opening up travel corridors?
the complexity is really about having agreements between countries, having trust that actually the healthcare systems in the respective countries can actually cope with an increase of cases, if that's the if it happens, that they have a good control in terms of number of COVID-19 cases. Such as Vietnam has nearly zero at the moment. Thailand is moving in the right direction, so you could potentially see a corridor in that area. Good measures for our protocols for controls at immigrations, at borders, entry and both exit as well in terms of health checks. So this is probably another reason why in the short term, and when I say short term, I mean like for the next 2 months, 2 to 3 months, domestic tourism will probably be a greater focus, mainly because people will feel more comfortable to be within their own countries. Thailand has a fantastic healthcare system, so people will feel more confident to travel within the country itself.
I am speaking with Mario Hardy, CEO of PATA, or Pacific Asia Travel Association, on The Breakfast Grill. PATA represents tour agencies, hotels, and some airline companies in the region. We'll discuss how travel and tourism will change in the next 12 months. Stay tuned and don't go away.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back. I'm with Mario Hardy, CEO of the Pacific Asia Travel Association, or PATA. What changes will we see in the travel and tourism industry post COVID-19?
Yeah, it's a very good question. It's a question that many of us are asking ourselves in the industry at the moment. The observations we have at the moment, the sentiment we get from research we've done with travelers in China, but also in overseas. For example, if you were to book an hotel, I would feel much more confident if I knew in advance before I even made my booking to know that this hotel has really good protocols and practices for sanitizations of the rooms and the public places at the hotel. Certainly, I think, you know, we've what we call as the death of the buffet, which has actually been around for hotels. For some locals, it's actually quite normal for people to go for a Sunday brunch at an hotel to enjoy a buffet. I suspect that those will be gone. And at least if they're still around, they'll be protected with different measures. The air travel part of it is also another critical area. People are concerned of jumping onto an aircraft at the moment because they have a sense of being contained in this environment that they perceive may not be actually really safe. Well, the reality is that if you talk to any of the aircraft manufacturers or the airlines or the International Air Travel Association, Air Transport Association, IATA, they will tell you that actually the air on board an aircraft is probably as clean as it is on an hospital. The HEPA filter they use is the same grade level as hospitals use. The air on an aircraft is a mix of fresh air and as well as recycled air. And the air actually flows on top of you, not from the bottom up. So sure, there's always risk anywhere you go in any mode of transport you use. But it's not as risky as what people may think.
What about Airbnb? Will it be dead?
On the contrary, certainly the research that we've seen so far is actually people would probably more likely go to an Airbnb. If you think of it, if you go to an hotel that has 1,000 rooms, which means potentially if you've got couples and families, nearly 2,000 guests, you will be surrounded by massive amount of people all the time. If you go to Airbnb and Airbnb is working with the host to establish some cleanliness and hygiene protocol in terms of how often it's cleaned, what chemicals and what products are used to clean the environment. It's actually probably safer in a way to go to an Airbnb where only you and your family are actually residing as opposed to thousands of other people. So I think it will be as competitive as it was before.
How would the business model of hotel chains, especially the large ones, how do you expect they will change their business model or they might start changing their focus to a different kind of demographic?
I do know that the big brands, the Hilton, the Marriott, the Accor, and et cetera, also looking at actually implementing technologies that actually they wanted or were planning to do in the years to come are actually moving them forward. So if you think about touchless check-in or actually not even any receptions at all, just remotely check-in on your phone, you get your key on your phone, you get to your room directly, you have less interactions with people, you don't have to touch a pen to sign a piece of paper or exchange physical money or credit cards. So the experience of actually checking in and going to an hotel within the next 12 months, I suspect will be very different from what we've experienced before.
How would this change the tourist agency trade?
We ran a survey over the last 2 months with an impact business survey across the world. 15% already closed their business with no intention of reopening. They simply just ran out of money. 42% of these businesses have said they only had money for 2 to 4 months. So by now, which is by the time since I looked, there's actually probably an higher percentage of those that are actually either closed or about to close in the coming weeks and et cetera. I don't actually suspect that it's not particularly related to the fact that there's the presence of OTAs. It's simply the fact that actually many of these businesses operate on very, very small margins, often actually would have lease space. They don't have any asset. They don't own buildings or they don't own a specific asset. They're providing a service. They're leasing space if they're a travel agent and just had to give it up. And not able to move forward because of lack of funding and cash flow.
This year was supposed to be Visit Malaysia year 2020. Malaysia has a lot of potential to grow still in the tourism trade. What lessons can we learn from Thailand or maybe even Vietnam on how Malaysia can improve or reposition or rethink its narrative as a tourism country?
Malaysia has lots to offer. The diversity of the nature, the diversity of the product offering from the islands, mountains to the tropical islands, to the jungles and the forest, and to UNESCO sites, Georgetown, Penang, and et cetera, Malacca. There is so much to offer in that country. We enjoyed going to Langkawi. We've been many times and spent holidays there, and many other places in Malaysia. So as Thailand has done, I think Malaysia has the same potential or even greater potentials too in promoting everything that it has to offer, because it will attract different type of audiences. It's a great destination for the MICE industry, also for trade shows and exhibitions and events with great convention centers in Kuching as well as other places, of course, in KL and other destinations within the country. So there's a mix of different products offering across the sector. Malaysia was actually doing really well in terms of tourism numbers pre-COVID-19. And as other countries, it will come back, but it will take time.
What lessons can we learn from Thailand in creating those more niche experiences?
The music festival in Borneo, the indigenous music festival that happens every year, is something quite remarkable. Thousands and thousands of people rush to that event every year. And there are other activities. It's more about actually storytelling, the things you already have. And so there are, I'm sure, many stories like this across Asia, in Malaysia, in Thailand, in Vietnam, in Cambodia, in every other country around the region here. I have no doubt there are actually thousands of other beautiful stories. So we need to use the art of storytelling and shout this message really, really loud and say, come and experience something really unique in our country.
So now with the closure of many tourist agencies, I wonder though whether, all these little stories will get lost in the process.
Not necessarily. I think it's the tourism boards and of the various countries, TAT here in Thailand or the equivalent in Malaysia also in other countries, have the ability to create beautiful marketing messages. With the advent of social media and many other vehicles we have now to share stories with the world, not necessarily. The sad reality, and I feel really bad for the businesses that have closed and many of my friends and many of our members have been impacted by this and have either closed their business or about to or had to make significant layoff within their organizations. But the reality is that others will pick up the business. Where people go, others will just pick it up and the story will continue.
Thank you so much for your time. I just spoke with Mario Hardy, CEO of PATA, or Pacific Asia Travel Association. I'm Noelle Lim on BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.